Hello, I'm Femi OK, and you're in the stream. Today we are bringing you three stories. Is Afghanistan being left to go hungry? As winter approaches, the food shortages are becoming dire. Then, while some nations are approving COVID vaccine boosters, other poorer nations are struggling to get first doses. And finally, the global pop star, Britney Spears. New documentaries have brought to life the controlling nature of her legal situation. What does her future look like? So all of these stories I know you have thoughts on. You can chat to us in our YouTube box. It's right here. And I will do my best to bring your comments to our panel of experts. But you'll have to be quick, though, as today's show is going to be a fast-moving programme. We start in Afghanistan, where more than 14 million people are at risk of going hungry. Here's Madassa with some context.
The people in Afghanistan are facing the worst humanitarian crisis. Health workers, teachers, and government employees have not received their salaries for more than 3 months now. The economy was already on shaky ground before the previous president left Afghanistan. Things are getting worse now. People who depended on daily wages are not able to support their families any longer because businesses are closed and construction and development work has stopped. Those who have money in banks cannot withdraw their money because the banks are allowing only up to $200 withdrawal in a week.
We're joined by Shaza Maghrabi. She is a spokesperson for the World Programme, World Food Programme, one of the few aid agencies continuing to work in Afghanistan. Shaza, it's good to have you here. If you could estimate the number of people right now in Afghanistan going hungry, what would you tell us?
Thank you so much, Femi, for having me. So what we're looking at in terms of the situation there is a very complex one, going even more complex and severe. We have 14 million people who are severely food insecure in Afghanistan. And, you know, we've recently did some surveys where we found out that 95% of families are not getting adequate food to get by the week. Some of them have been completely cut off and run out of food at least once in the past 2 weeks. We've got one in three Afghans who are severely food insecure. Half of the children under five are malnourished, and a quarter of women who are pregnant and breastfeeding are also malnourished. So what we're seeing, as I said, is like a situation that's growing more severe and complex. What we need is $200 million to provide life-saving food assistance to 14 million people from now till the end of the year. And we need that money right now because winter is just around the corner. And we need to make sure that we can pre-position the food stocks and provide this lifeline to families in need. Otherwise, the consequences are going to be catastrophic.
Shaza, I want to bring in the country director of the World Food Programme in Afghanistan because she is talking about how families are managing not knowing where the next meal may come from. Here she is.
Three in four are already borrowing food. They're eating less nutritious food, so basically they're foregoing meat and dairy and vegetables. They're also reducing their portion size, and in many cases, their parents are foregoing to eat so that the children can eat. So basically everyone's teetering on the brink of desperate hunger.
I want to go straight to YouTube, Shaza, because we've got a question here. This is from Wali Abro. Bureaucratic red tape is killing Afghans by virtue of denying aid due to Taliban members being part of a UN terror list. And Hermes says, do foreign aid agencies have logistical and security support from the Taliban? Two important questions there. Let's talk about red tape, first of all. Is that impacting WFP's work on the ground in Afghanistan?
We're able to scale up very swiftly. We're ready to provide assistance based on, obviously, the humanitarian principles of humanity, neutrality, operational independence, and impartiality. So we're ready to deliver the assistance to those who need it. And we have been given the access and the assurances to do so. What we need are the funds in order to sort of get the assistance to those who need it the most. And as I cannot stress enough how much we need to do that as soon as possible before winter sets in, because once the snow sets in, yep, it's going to be very difficult to access those families and those communities. And this could be their only lifeline while they're being cut off with the snow. So it's very important that we act urgently.
So Shaza, there was a good question there from Hermes about your security. I believe that the answer would be you couldn't possibly explain the security for the World Food Programme members who are down on the ground in Afghanistan. But what would you say to that question?
Sorry, the security?
Yes, who's providing your security? Are the Taliban and making sure that you are staying secure, that you can do your work on the ground?
Well, we're getting assurances, you know, from we've been working with the Taliban for decades right now, and all in all conflict zones, we work with the de facto authorities. And it's their responsibilities to ensure the security of aid workers operating on the ground. And we've been able to carry out our operations. We have launched flights. Not many people know that we actually manage the UN Humanitarian Air Service. So this is a service for the humanitarian community that transports aid workers from one place to another. So we've established these flights. They've been flying regularly. And we've also been able to get support and assistance through land routes and through cross-border operations.
All right, so I'm just going to show this last graphic here, Shaza, because you said multiple times you need aid, you need money right now. This is from AlJazeera.com. Afghanistan, 14 million people going hungry. I'm just going to help you out here with the legend. Dark red is famine. No famine here yet. But look at the orange. Orange is crisis. Red is emergency. You see the red areas there. And very little is green. In fact, there's nowhere here that says a minimal food insecurity level. So Afghanistan right now is stressed, in crisis, in emergency. Shaza, thank you very much for bringing us this news, this really important news from the World Food Programme. We will leave it there. Appreciate you joining us on the stream. And now, COVID vaccines. Last week, the US approved booster shots for certain people, while the African continent has not even reached a 10% vaccination rate. Have a look.
Of the 6 billion doses of COVID vaccines administered worldwide, 80% have gone to high and upper middle income countries, and less than 0.5% have gone to Africa. This means that we will continue to see people getting infected and dying unnecessarily from COVID when we actually have the tools that have been developed at unprecedented speed to be able to stop the acute phase of the pandemic and to address the huge impacts on health, on society, and on economies.
While the United States has been a leader in donating and pledging more vaccines than any other country, we need to continue to prioritize first doses of vaccines in arms all around the world. Because if we don't, then we may see the emergence of newer, more virulent variants that can pierce vaccine-induced and natural immunity for all of us. We cannot boost our way out of the pandemic.
Welcome back to the stream, Achal Prabala. He is from Bangalore in India. He's a public health activist. He talks to us about vaccine equity and vaccine inequity. Achal, I've just got to ask you right now, knowing how the world is divided between the haves and have-nots for vaccines, what's your mood?
I'm despondent. I've been working on this for the last year and a half, trying to increase access to coronavirus vaccines. And what's astonishing is that for all of the sound and the fury, in fact, the actions of rich governments like the United States and Germany have finally signified not very much. So what we now have with booster shots being rolled out is a minority of the world, 15% of the world, which is vaccinated between 50 and 70% of its populations, have now the ability to put a third dose into people's arms, while a majority of the poor countries in this world, about half the world's population, waits for a first dose. It's astonishing.
So talking about a booster, the booster debate, this is President Biden getting a vaccination. Now, I confused the video for his first set of COVID vaccines. But this is the booster, so this is his third shot just earlier this week. Have a look.
What do you say to world health leaders, like the World Health Organization, who say wealthy nations should help more countries without vaccinations get vaccinated before they can boost here in America?
We are helping. We're doing more than every other nation in the world combined. We're going to have well over 1.1 billion shots, and we're going to continue going. We're going to do our part. We've also given a great deal of funding to COVAX, which is the vehicle that does this. So we have plenty of opportunities to make sure we get everyone in the world to play our part, the largest part in the world, of getting everyone vaccinated.
Actual thoughts. We're doing more than every other nation combined, to the President of the United States.
I wish I could believe him, Femi. I hadn't seen that video. It's just not true. The United States is doing more than any rich Western nation, but it's definitely not doing anything more than every other country in the world combined. The truth is that the donations the United States have made are a trickle. In total, they'll donate enough to vaccinate tens of millions of people when the need is really in the tens of billions of vaccines. We need more than 10 billion vaccines in order to vaccinate the world. Vaccinating tens of millions of people through donations is welcome, but it's hardly a drop of water in the ocean. So it's disingenuous. It's also self-defeating. I think that when Americans take booster shots, they forget that the variant of COVID that they are protecting themselves against came from India at a time when 3% of our population was vaccinated. Well, guess what's happening now? One of the most populous continents on Earth, the continent of Africa, has a vaccination rate of 3% of its population having been vaccinated. And so there are variants there and in other places that are potentially waiting to come back into countries that are giving out boosters. It's treating the problem at a surface level. It's not treating the wound. That's not going to work out well.
So I'm going to go to YouTube first of all, and then I'm going to show you a PSA where some various celebrities around the world are encouraging people to do better. So this is John Cooper on YouTube. Thanks for watching, John. We need to encourage vaccine uptake in developing countries alongside distribution, bringing in another issue here about uptake. And then what are celebrities telling us? Is this messaging working? Have a look.
There are two COVID-19 worlds,
one for the rich and one for the poor.
If you live in a rich country, vaccines are rolling out 30 times faster.
And you have the option to be safe.
If you live in a poorer country, the pandemic could last another 4 years.
With devastating long-term effects on health, education, and jobs.
The divide is not just unfair and inhumane.
It is dangerous.
New variants are already thriving, especially in places where vaccination rates are low.
Now, variants don't know that there are two worlds.
We are in this together.
Till everybody is safe,
nobody is safe.
Achal.
It's the right message. I'm happy that all of these celebrities and Harry and Meghan last weekend have been saying the same thing. The truth is, though, however, that the power rests with two governments out of the many rich Western countries who have power, and those are the United States and Germany, because these are the two governments that funded and created most of the vaccines that are in the world today. Now, people in the United States and Germany have the power of the ballot, and they can force their governments to do the right thing, since clearly after a year and a half of trying, we know that the pharmaceutical companies in those countries aren't. This is what I hope really happens. This is what I hope the celebrities can drive, which is mass action by ordinary people who have clear, rational empathy for the rest of us in this world and can force their governments to do the right thing. Because unless that happens, it really looks like nothing's going to change.
So a couple of questions here on Twitter. Let me put this one to you from Johnny. Twitter here on my laptop. Johnny says, racism, politics and capitalism are the greatest challenges in ensuring global vaccine equity. What do you think? Are we looking at racism here, or is it just about wealth, Achal?
I have to say that in this case, I think it is a short-term sprint to hoover up as much money that is possible on the part of a handful of companies. I can count them on less than one hand, as quickly as possible, without heed to the social and emotional costs of that profiteering. In this case, I think it's not even capitalism as it was meant to function. It is a whole series of monopolies, which is very anti-capitalistic in every way that capitalism is defined in a textbook. It really does go against the grain of every decent human notion we have, every economic concept that we hold dear. Doesn't matter whether you're on the left or the right. This is something that people should be up in arms about everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Achal, thank you so much. You always come with the same message and we always keep bringing you back. Finally, some pop culture news. Some new documentaries have revealed what the life of Britney Spears has been like under the conservatorship of her father. A recent New York Times film focuses on the monitoring and surveillance Britney has faced. People once close to the pop star have spoken out.
Like, I know this is the right thing to do, and I really want to do it, but it's still scary. I don't know what's going to happen after this comes out.
I've never spoken about what we witnessed. You know, we signed those NDAs, and it has been hard to come forward knowing there are people in her management that could stop me from making a living. But this is important.
Lisa McCarley joins us now from California. She is an estate and probate attorney and has worked extensively on conservatorships. Lisa, it's so good to have you here on the stream. People sometimes do a double take if we do pop culture on Al Jazeera. But this is really, really important because why? What have we learned about conservatorships through Britney Spears?
Right. Well, one of the things that I've been working on as one of my personal projects is trying to bring to light what I call abusive conservatorships. And this is a result of systemic flaws and litigation laws that are flawed. And instead of protecting people that are truly incapacitated and need to be protected, the system now frequently inflicts trauma, abuse, and exploitation on people. And Britney Spears might be one of the worst examples that I've ever seen, but she is part of a system of abuse, a pattern of abuse that is going on throughout the United States.
Let me give people an example of what some allege is abuse of Britney Spears. So, for instance, in the New York Times film, where it's looking at the surveillance and monitoring of Britney Spears, at some point she wanted to have her phone, an iPhone, and then that iPhone was monitored. Let's have a look. Let's have a listen.
Why don't we just take an iPad, sign in with an iCloud on there, the same iCloud that Britney would use on her phone, and that would mirror all activity. You would be able to see all messages, all FaceTime calls, notes, browser history, photographs.
So Lisa is just literally shaking her head through that entire clip. What's gone wrong here, Lisa? Why would that not be okay?
Well, even if Britney Spears needed a conservator, and I don't believe that she ever did. I believe that there were a series of missteps by the court and the attorneys that resulted in a violation of her constitutional rights and civil liberties that has never been warranted. But to use surveillance on any person to this extent is disgusting. It's despicable misconduct and way out of line for a conservator who is supposed to be, yes, protecting you, but this is just one more violation of Britney Spears' person and her sanctity as a human being. So I was mortified watching this documentary. I've been mortified every time I learn something new about this conservatorship.
What should an ideal conservatorship look like, Lisa? So we know, if we've got an example of a really bad one, what should a good one look like?
Well, I've been fortunate in my practice that I represent families who are dealing with very difficult circumstances where a loved one either has been born incapacitated, has become incapacitated, or has aged into incapacity. And by incapacity, the California law is very clear. What they are looking for is someone literally unable to provide for their own needs for health, food, clothing, and shelter. Conservatorship will typically involve an elderly person. Most of my conservatees are elderly. They have failed to do estate planning, which would allow them to escape the supervision of the court. And, you know, of course, there are many reasons that that goes wrong. But really what we're looking for is a family member or a trusted fiduciary to step in and manage someone in a way that gives them the most freedom, that gives them the highest quality of life that they can possibly enjoy at this particular stage.
Lisa, one of the reasons why we are so focused on what's happening to Britney Spears is because the fans, her fans, they love her. They're very involved in what is happening to her and her well-being and are concerned about what may happen to her conservatorship. Here's Ben. Have a listen to Ben.
So I don't think it's likely that Wednesday's hearing will result in immediate termination of full conservatorship, which is what Jamie's team has filed for. I don't see that happening, although we will take it. What I see happening, hopefully, is Britney's lawyer's petition to remove Jamie Spears as conservator of estate being approved by the judge and then them filing to terminate, hopefully, before her 40th birthday in December.
Lisa, what do you think is going to happen next?
Well, I certainly would never have guessed that we would see tomorrow's hearings being queued up like this. But we have basically Jamie and his lawyers arguing vehemently that the conservatorship should be terminated. And we have Britney's attorneys. And after Britney has stated numerous times that she wants her conservatorship terminated, now they're saying, whoa, hold on, we need to have an interim fiduciary. I don't have anything to say about it, but if it was my call to make, I would love to see this rancid, horrible conservatorship terminated tomorrow and let the lawyers fight about the money and fight about what happened over the last 13 years or more, totally independent of having any authority or any jurisdiction over controlling Britney Spears. I'd like to see that end. But right now, the way that the attorneys are setting things up, very hard to tell what Judge Penny is going to do tomorrow.
I'm going to leave you with one more fan voice. This is the fan voice of Rachel. Viewers, it gives you a sense of how involved Britney fans are with Britney's well-being. Here's Rachel.
To me, it's very simple. You know, it's nothing's wrong with Britney. Why is she in this conservatorship? And if something is wrong with Britney, which I don't believe, then why is she having to work insanely and pay for all these different people and lawyers and team members and all these things? She's the one doing all the work, and she's the one putting in all the effort. She's the one that's missed out on time with her children, and I hate that for her. I will always love her and support her, and I hope she gets free.
Thank you, Rachel, and thank you, Lisa, in particular, for joining us. If you have any stories that you would like to cover on the stream, tweet us at AJStream. Thanks for watching. See you next time.